Happy Sunday, everybody. Welcome to the first Sunday special of the Horsemanship Remark Show. Have a very special guest tonight, but I'll tell you guys just really quickly that this arrived out of wanting to have more conversations with so many more people, but not give up our amazing time with you know, Michael every Thursday morning. So this is going to be probably a once a month deal, at least to start with. And we have Billy Money tonight. So, let's see. He has a team of supporters. Let's see. I'll get him going. He's going to talk the whole time, you guys, which is exactly what's so amazing about him. He has so many adventures.
Hello.
Oh, much better.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. So be quiet while I talk about you.
Okay.
Thanks. Go. All right. So Bill is a horse friend who I met through Buck Bradman, and he has had an illustrious long career as one of the top orthopedic surgeons in the United States of America, which is very exciting. Sad that he is now switching careers, perhaps, because he has also long been a musician. Bill, would you categorize yourself as a country? Probably, I think you would categorize. We'll ask him. But he has a beautiful voice. He sings like an angel. He really does, which I've known for a lot of years, because he was like, oh, I sing. And I'm like, well, sing for me. And he's like, whoa. And that was amazing. So Rebecca says hi. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in. I know I didn't give everyone a lot of warning. Hope everyone has their cocktails. So mine is apple cider vinegar, lemon, and bubbly water. And God knows what they've got going on. So anyway, Bill and I have had a lot of awesome horse discussions. And also, he has a really exciting time going on right now. He's shooting music videos. I don't know for sure where they are. We'll have to find that out. But like, he has an actual team of Hollywood people. By the way, I'd like to be a backup singer for Bill one of these days. But
can you hear me yet?
I can hear you.
Okay. Can you see me?
I can see you.
Okay, good. Well, you know, we've had in July around here, we have in August, we have these tremendous summer storms. And today we've had quite a doozy. So we've had a little challenge with the internet. And we've been down in a little town called Cochran, Georgia, doing a music video on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We have been recording and doing music videos. I've never done them before. These guys have done them and do an excellent job. I'm blown away by the quality that they have, you know, come up with. And it's hard work, you know. You know, because you have to sing a song, and then they want you to sing it again and again and again. And then that you think you're done, they want you to sing it in a different angle, you know, another five times. And then they want to say, well, let's do it again, but let's do it with a bunch of cows around you. And then, you know, it's just, I mean, it's hard work, but these guys have done a great job. We had this afternoon, we were doing Nancy's song. If you'd like to, you can go on Spotify and listen to Nancy's song. It's the Billy Money Band, Nancy's song and Dip and Chew. You can see both of those songs. And then on our YouTube channel, which will be coming out in about 6 weeks, they'll be on there also. And you can see what we did. I think you'll be, I'm blown away, and all I've seen is just the scratch, you know, videos or vocals, or however you want to say it. But this all is pretty amazing, but it's not as hard as horsemanship. But I would say that it ranks right up there. You know, the different thing about horsemanship, you come into horsemanship and you have a certain level of knowledge and talent. And the thing that makes you change and become different is not any, it's your knowledge. I know one time I was having this conversation with Buck, and I'd had these interns here that we do this internship program, and we have people come here and stay, and there's a fee to stay, and we give them a place to live, and they do 3 months or 6 months, or longer if they want to, and we teach them how to, you know, start calls, horsemanship, how to rope, just basically how to be a cowboy. And I would get sometimes, these horses they were riding were my horses, which I had had at least in the Bozal. But you have to sacrifice, well, I wouldn't say sacrifice, that's a bad word. You have to be able to have horses in the ride. So you say, okay, this horse I really like, but not as much as that horse. So I'm going to let this person who doesn't know anything ride this horse. And, but then some days I would be so like, oh gosh, I can't stand it any longer. And, but I still wouldn't say anything because you got to let people, you know, have their own journey, and they've got to, you know, have frustrated, and they have to go through their own journey, and that motivates you to search deeper. So you, as you gain more knowledge, you search deeper to find out what you need to fit the horse. But I would say, okay, get off your horse. I got to get on your horse. See, I got to feel what you're not feeling. And I told Buck, I said, I get on that horse. And after about like, you know, 10 minutes, it feels like my bridle horse. And I said, so I got a question for you. I said, do I have some kind of deeper insight or something? Do I have some kind of magic or something that not everybody has? And he said to me, no, you don't have any magic. And what you do have is a lot more knowledge and a lot more experience. And you developed, you searched. And so that's, I think that's a kind of a neat story that lets everybody have hope that it's not some type of, it's not just a few people who can do this. In music, there probably are just a few people who can do this because you're given a good voice, you're given a good appreciation of music, you're given a good feel for maybe how to be a good writer. But
right.
Horsemanship is different, but I would say they're equally as hard, you know, in their own right.
Thank God surgery has been so easy, because man, you're already doing two hard things.
Well, surgery's not easy either, but that's also knowledge. And I think everything, field timing and balance can be applied to about anything in life, you know.
It's interesting. Well, how you come by a level of excellence is an interesting thing to compare music or surgery. Let's just leave that out. That's kind of not relatable for a lot of people. But how do you come by any level of excellence or success? And I cannot speak to the, well, I should be able to speak to the musical part, but it's so long ago. Of course, Buck was right, and you're right, that it's knowledge and experience, but that third layer of how you change and how it, that spirit thing, you know, that goes through you is hard to pass on. Right? And it's hard to describe. And I'm super curious how it relates do you feel that same evolution in yourself in regards to the music, or is the music just in you and it's just coming out one way or the other? Do you follow what I'm asking? Like the horsemanship.
I know exactly what you're saying. And I think I have a level of understanding about it. I'll just address the music first. I was born to sing.
Agreed.
God gave me a gift. You too. You were born to sing. You need to do more singing.
Not like you, though. Not
well,
like
I don't,
you.
No,
it's
I don't
not
know.
Like you. It's
But
not.
Grew up in a culture where, you know, music was not encouraged. But, you know, being a doctor was encouraged. So did you hear that?
I did. I heard you say
okay.
that you grew up in a culture where being a musician was not encouraged, but being a doctor
no.
was encouraged. Yeah.
Right. And I don't think that I took a wrong path or anything. It's just that, you know, we're a product of the of our people that were around who, where we get encouragement. And there's a rare people that, you know, push through in spite of being, you know, not encouraged, and maybe even discouraged. They push through it and they end up, you know, finding their niche and create great things, if not greatness. Great art, accomplish great things in business or whatever the venue or the art that your path leads you. But I think that music, I've always had this in me. I've told Nancy many times, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I can't keep this inside of me any longer. I've got to do something. I don't know how to do it. I don't know where it would come from. You know, back in the late 90s, I had a lot of sit-down meetings with Polygram Records, and we could have had a record deal if we wanted to. But I, you know, by that time in my life, I'd made so many commitments to orthopedics, built a huge clinic and everything, and was paying mortgages for that. Had three little girls. I didn't really relish the idea of traveling around the country in a big bus, you know, with three little girls and a wife. So we had to make a decision, would we do one or the other? And we decided it was, you know, basically a safer choice to be an orthopedic surgeon. But I never lost the dream or I never lost the desire or I always felt like I had to do this. And that's not, that doesn't mean that I'm going to be some kind of some famous singer or songwriter. It's just that music is in me and I just got to get it out. And then when I get it out, it could just be, you know, enjoyment to a few people or it could be enjoyment to lots of people, but I don't care. I don't
That's
care.
When you know it's right. That's when you know it's right. You know, my friend, he's the one who says it. I think he says it the best, Buck. He says it has to have a heartbeat. It has to
be
the compulsion, you know, coming from within you beyond how it's going to be recognized or appreciated.
And I think horses are the horsemanship is different because I think you can develop and the horsemanship. And I think the key to that is you have to, there's certain people who always maintain their search. They're not going to let anything kill or diminish their desire to keep searching about how to fit a horse, how to be better.
I love that.
Because
yeah,
they just they're bound and determined that they're going to figure this out, and you'll go through. I mean, I'm still on that journey. Like somebody said one time, I don't know who said this, but, you know, the destination is the journey. Everybody has heard that before. It's not original by me. But to get there, to keep pursuing it, you have to have this desire every day that you wake up that you're trying to get out of the way of yourself and keep pursuing to feel a horse. And Ray said it, probably somebody else said it. And maybe this is not original with Ray, I don't know. But all I know is true is that the secret of the horsemanship is to fit the horse. Mm-hmm. And And then you add on top of that, I'm just going to spill all my pearls on you all at the first 30 minutes. The most significant, would you like to know the most significant thing that Buck Brahman ever told me?
I would.
You would? And he knows it because he's, we're sitting right here in this living room and I'm just going to ask him a million questions. And I think I just operated on his elbow. It's been past 10 years, so HIPAA violations or don't count. So Buck can't sue me. But anyway, I'd operated on his elbow and we're sitting around here and I'm asking a million questions and I've been reading a lot of different books. And he kind of, not out of frustration, just kind of like I was trying to figure out, you know, how do I feel, you know, collection? I was asking all these things. And he was telling me all the mechanical things to do. I said, I know those, but you know, I know I can get better at those. You know, I know I'm not in, you know, where I should be with all the groundwork and all of the progressions. He said, here's the deal. I wish I could teach you what I know. And I looked at him with a, just like, what are you saying? Don't you want to teach me what you know? And he said again, I wish I could teach you what I know. And I said, I really felt like just thumping him on the forehead. But he's kind of
reacting. How do you do that to him?
He's kind of reactive. And he kind of overdoes things. When you thump him, he wants to thump you harder. So I decided I'd leave that alone. Although, you know, if I had to, I could take him down. But I don't want him to know that. So anyway. I learned something from that is that he really meant that the only person that can teach me those things that I am like really want to know, those that feel, is the horse. And my relentless pursuit of it by keeping my search alive. And that goes hand in hand with not doing things to diminish the horse's equally as important search and feeling back to you. And I guess we can end the podcast there. Because that's about summed it up. And then hey, enjoy the rest of your life because that's your journey. And you can get so frustrated by asking questions about that. And the answer is get out there and go to work and just keep searching and asking questions to people who know more than you do.
Okay, so my question in regards to the music and the horsemanship, is it the same? This is my question, or is it the same? Is it similar? So one of the things that I keep coming back to, certainly in this last year, is that, you know, the feel in horsemanship, slotting into that true unity or that harmony or those moments that everything is correct, is getting in harmony with everything, not just your horse, but yourself, the earth, like everything around you, you slot into place. Is music the same? Like, is the way that I just imagine this from horsemanship. Yes, I've been a singer a long, long time ago, but nothing, I was not this evolved when I was doing it. So, but I think back to it, that there would be times when maybe the sound and the emotion and the feeling that would come out would be a slotting in to everything. Is it that way? Do you feel that same thing when you're kind of right on? Not when you've been asked to do it 10,000 times for a video, but when you're singing to, you know, in a perfect moment, because you can technically, I know you're the one take wonder, you could do it 1,000 times, plenty good enough to be recorded right away. But I would guess that there's also some magic moments that feel different as well. Is that right?
Well, I guess the short answer is yes. I don't know. I guess if you could describe that feeling, that wonder that God creates in you, and then you're given the gift of being able to express a certain moment or event or feeling that you have, and you put it in words and song, and you blend them all together. And not only that, but you have the phrasing that works, or you don't say words you could say, you say words you can say, and you have pauses in the right place, and all that happens. I think that's just like Michelangelo and David. It's something that you have. It's a gift. And, you know, he sat there, the patrons paid him, Michelangelo, a certain amount of money. And for months, he had this big piece of marble, and he'd go out there, stare at it for 4 hours a day. And they just said, "What in the heck are you doing?" He says, "I'm finding David." And that's paraphrased. And then after a while, he saw David, and then he chipped away all of the marble that wasn't David. And there was David. So I don't know how you compare that to horsemanship, except for, you know, I can give you some hyperboles that might match it. I think it's just,
well, let's talk about it, because I'm like, that sounds exactly like
well, you want to chip away stuff that is not David. It's probably most of the crap that you bring into the arena. That's yourself. Maybe that's the crap you need to chip away. A horse doesn't come in the arena with any crap unless you put it there. He's just, that's just like Leroy Brown sitting over there looking at me. He's a dog. And he's, what's different about dogs and horses and humans is that they always are true to their character. This is my experience. They're always true to their character. Dogs are always going to be a dog. Horses and always be a horse. But a man or a woman, we're really good at deceit or not quite being who we say we are, you know. But that's why we love horses so much, is they're not liars. They're just always true to their character. That's why we love being around them, because they're so true. So the challenge is not the horse. Challenge is us dealing with our crap and then having that knowledge to fit them to where, you know, we're as clean as they are, you know. So that's kind of my style. That's the way I look at it.
It's funny how humans are the best at lying to themselves.
Yeah.
We are the best at lying to ourselves, right?
This so, so then you say, I should beat this horse because it didn't do what I told it to do. And the horse says, that was the wrong answer. But you know what? Well, that kind of worked when I was over here. I kind of got to be a bully and everybody kind of fell in line. Well, that horse doesn't have that type of, he didn't read the memo.
And he's not obsessed with the horse doesn't have an obsession with what he thinks the other horses think he should be.
No, he's just a horse. Okay. He's going to always behave every time, like a horse. Now, if you come in there with our crap, you can make him scared. You can, you know, make him respond differently because the baggage that the human brought into it, or other things, you know. But yeah, that's what I love about animals, is an aardvark is always gonna be an aardvark. Kangaroo is always gonna be a kangaroo, you can count on it. Horse is always gonna be a horse. Dog is always gonna be a dog. They're different. So if we wanna be really great horsemen, we'll learn how to fit the character of the horse.
Speak the devil.
He's being a devil right now. He's chasing his tail.
He's jealous
that I'm not spending time with him.
Buddy, he can be on the show. It's just going to make me want to be in a dog again.
Bring him up here in a minute, but.
Yeah, do it. So, but Bill, I was thinking about a horse being a horse, and especially I was out with the wild horses this last week. Oh my God, we have stuff to talk about. But we've been around plenty of clean babies, you too. But the horse that has been damaged really quite a lot, let's say, it's so upsetting to be around that, where they have, the horse being a horse has been, usually accident, set up so badly, you know? It's not fun to be around. Leroy, oh my gosh, are you picking him up?
No, I just slid his chair around here. I'll tell you why that. Okay, so go ahead. So you had the Mustang, the horses out there on the range.
Well, I'm just saying that it's interesting to think. It just made me think the horse will always be a horse. Except, isn't it interesting that there is a reality to how perverted a horse can become under certain circumstances, such that they are almost unrecognizable.
It is interesting to me that sometimes the least experienced or least knowledgeable people want to have that horse.
Yeah. Well,
there's so many great horses out there. Just, just go ahead and find a way to spend a little bit more money to have a horse that you can have maybe less baggage with.
It's amazing how horses get by, but on occasion you'll see something. Nathan, you're here this morning, NG, or this morning, this evening. He and I were just talking about some sort of a behavior that did not come naturally to the horse that a person put on. Anyway, I just think.
Yeah, there's all sorts of behavior that doesn't come naturally to a horse,
right?
That the human is, reason it's there.
And I guess the what makes me think of is how important it is for us to preserve horsemanship. It's given us so much, right?
Yeah.
So continue to remember that it should come from a place of fitting in to the universe.
Yeah, I do think it makes us better people. I mean, it's not to elevate the horse to something more than being a horse, but it is something that enriches your lives, and you can learn something from how you have to change in order to get something better from the horse. And maybe, and that's true with your relationships with people too. You have to come in there with a humbleness, maybe that you've not been using in your other relationships. And maybe that makes things better in just your interpersonal relationships too. But the most important relationship you can have, that is the most rewarding relationship probably you could ever have, is with people, so those are the kind of relationships I want to have the most effect with are people. But, I've learned a lot from dealing with horses about how to maybe be a better person in my relationships with people. But, they're all it's life, you know, and you life experiences that you figure out things.
So that when you were talking with Polygram, that was before horses, right?
Right.
And now we're here at this place where you're recording music and doing here. So what is the difference? Like, tell me.
What's the difference? Phrase that question again. What's the difference between what?
Well, so you've had now years and years of horse experience between mm-hmm. the last time you were professionally mm-hmm. recording. Mm-hmm. So how is it different coming back to music like at this capacity? How do you feel different? You must be.
Yeah, I would say horses are a part of that. I think it's just life mm-hmm. experiences. And, you know, just living life and having a great wife and kind of learning through life what's important. And, I always felt like I needed to sing. I needed to keep writing. And I didn't know how that was going to happen. And I prayed. You know, I said, Lord, I know I need to do this, but I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm not going to worry about it. And so, you know, I'm a firm believer that he guides my life, and he brought these people into my life that have, you know, been a great blessing to me. And so one thing happens, the next thing happens, and the next thing happens, and pretty, you know, I was a friend of mine that I'd been in business with. Y'all want to hear the story?
I do.
I don't want to, you know, share a lot about myself too much, but I was back in the 80s, 80s and early 90s, Allman Brothers, Grinder Switch, Southern Rock deal. I'm here in Macon, Georgia. And I was writing some music with Jimmy Nalls, who played with Dr. John and B.J. Thomas and et cetera, et cetera. And then Larry Howard was the lead guitar player for Grinder Switch, which was an opening band for the Allman Brothers. And so I was here in Macon, and we all kind of got together. We had a writing studio. And Larry had been like just an absolute, you know, cocaine addict. And he had married this Cherokee woman, Peggy. You should have heard her sing Amazing Grace in Cherokee. She couldn't carry a tune, but it sounded good because I didn't know what she was singing. But anyway, but it was great people. And Larry was in a hotel room in Lakeland, Florida, and he had a plate of cocaine. And his friend with him was a drummer for Wings. That was a band that Paul McCartney started. And Larry had been, over the last couple of years, people kept giving him Bibles. And they all had his name on it. And he didn't care a thing about it. He wanted to chunk them in the trash can, but he didn't want anybody, his mama found out that a Bible with Larry Howard's name on it was in a trash can. So, but he, that night, he decided while he's on cocaine, he was going to read the Bible. Long story short, he ended up in the emergency room, coded, they brought him back, and that changed his life. So he came to Macon, Georgia, and he wanted to start, he hooked up with Chuck Colson, who was in the prison ministries. And Chuck Colson and him got together, then I came to the picture, and we did all these recordings for Chuck Colson, prison ministries. We had the Tams and Miss America and you know, all these older artists into the prison, and we put on these prison, and we record them, and we put these CDs and whatnot. And so then that brought me into, you know, back into Nashville and all that type of stuff. And I believe it was a guy who was I may have this wrong. I think he was a manager of Molly Hatchet, but he saw something in me, and that got me up to Nashville. And then, you know, the rest of the story didn't turn out right. So this time I didn't care anything about it. So this guy, a friend of mine who was with the Allman Brothers, went to Australia, came back in town, had a shoulder problem, came in my office and said, He said, Billy, what are you doing with your music? I said, nothing. He says, do you want to do anything with it? Yeah, I do. He says, well, why don't you do a benefit concert? I said, okay, I'll do a benefit concert. And I really didn't know how I was going to do that. I was trying to put a band together, but that's a hard thing to do. So I thought, I'm going to go back up to Nashville, my old contacts, and I'm going to get a band together and do this benefit concert. And while I was up in Lexington, Kentucky, a couple of artists up there were at the clinic. And this girl, Natalie Murphy, came up to me and she said, I'm a recording artist in Nashville. She said, I hear you're a good singer and writer. I said, well, yeah, I'm good. And she said, well, so let's talk. So we started talking. And we decided that Nick, her husband, who had just left Kenny Chesney, right? Left Jeff Kenny Chesney, and he was going to do some producing, and he had an Apple radio show, and he had put a plug in for Nick. Watch Outdoor Channel, Nick's Wild Rides, great TV show about outdoors. Nick's a great guy. And so they came down here to the ranch, and we rode horses, and we played music. And then Nick said, after he heard some of the songs I wrote, he says, hey, I'm going to put the Billy Money Band together, and you're Billy Money, and we are going to go to Nashville and do these recordings. And so, and here I am, you know. So, ta-da. Yeah, and so, and a lot of other positive things are happening, too. Let me introduce you. I'm going to bring Max here. So this is Max Young. Can you see Max?
I think I know Max.
Max, there. Okay, back. There's Max.
Fancy. I am
you here.
I know. So, it's nice to see you.
And also,
does this mean I'm not going to see you next weekend?
No, you might. We're heading home tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And then JT Hazard, can you get over there? You see JT? Hold on.
Jake, hi. JT. Nice to meet you. Okay, so tell who these guys are. I know Max, but okay, so,
JT's from LA, and he is a music video producer. And they have, you know, got a lot of credits to their name.
What editing software are you using?
I use Adobe Premiere. I'm actually an Adobe certified professional.
You are? Okay, so I was logging through Final Cut Pro. Should I abandon that and just go to Adobe?
No, Final Cut Pro has a lot of great tools in it. It's really easy to just kind of drop your footage in and work with it. I like Premiere because I know all the back-end stuff. I know where all of the temporary files and all of the technical jargon is. But I mean, I think if you're doing stuff with Photoshop or doing stuff with other kind of assets, then yes. But if you just want a streamlined way of editing your footage, Final Cut is the way to go.
So if you're using After Effects or working with, like you said, Photoshop and things like that, then Premiere is the way to go.
Yes, right. So if you are using After Effects, there's a direct link between Premiere and After Effects. You can right-click a clip and open it in After Effects. Once you save it in After Effects, it will automatically save it into Premiere. So,
cool. Yeah, and this is interesting.
Wait a minute. I want to understand how this fits in together. Because we're not about editing. So you're also out there filming. Is that because Max, yeah, you're filming and you're filming?
So Max is my producer. Max and I met, end of 2017, I think. And we realized really quickly that we work really well together. The things that I don't think of, he thinks of twice. And, you know, he's made it possible for me to be the creative that I am and get the best projects, which, you know, I'm sitting here with one of the coolest people I've ever met.
Who's that?
That's Nancy. She's over there. I'm the technical side of our crew. I direct, shoot, and edit the videos, but it's all through the logistic and overall creative lens of someone I trust implicitly, which is Max. And I wouldn't be here working with Billy if it wasn't for him. So that's really a lot to his credit.
Cool. I'm so excited. So Max, you know, he and I have talked just a little bit at clinics. Mostly we're doing horses all the time. But I heard through the grapevine that, well, Bill told me that this was happening. So I cannot wait to talk about all of this. Has it been so fun?
Oh my gosh, it has been everything I could have dreamed of. This whole shoot's been incredible.
I bet you it's so fun. So tell, what's the best part? What's been the best part?
I genuinely could not narrow it down. We've had 5 full days of shooting. We've had locations all across the board. You know, we Bill's 70th birthday was our first night.
What? I'm not that. 60.
17.
50.
17.
52. Yeah. Nobody believe that.
Hey, you wear that proudly.
No way. You look at me in the videos. No way.
Yeah, but your personality is certainly 17.
So for his birthday, we had a bar and we, you know, packed the bar for seeing him performing. And today we were at the university in Cochrane and we had these classic cars and it was a total 1973 scene. In fact, I should let one of these guys tell the story because I'll cut out all the fun details.
Well, this was kind of cool today. It was kind of unusual. They're very worried about this going to this college. And I arranged for the cars to be there. I had the relationship with the president of the university. But they're like, so we get down there, they're kind of worried about it. We pull up into the small university. So it's very quaint. It's very Southern. It's very old. And we pull up there and we see, well, we really want to go down the street, but these orange poster in the, our way. And so I said, let me call the president of the university. And they were like, so I called him. Hey, Chris, how you doing? He says, jolly good, jolly good. And he's English, and he's in Denver. And he says, are you at the school? I said, yeah, we're here. I'll call the police, and they'll be right there. Give me 5 minutes.
I'm used to a very different call the police. with filmmaking, especially independent filmmaking, I will call the police is when we leave, not when we get there.
And they blocked off the whole street for us. And then they wanted, where are these 3 vintage cars? We had a 1967 Camaro, We had a 1969 Mercury Comet, souped up convertible, and we had, what was the other car?
A GTO.
Oh, we had a GTO 1969. And so we filmed this thing using Ben and Helen, my niece, and Helen was Nancy Young. And we kind of acted out the first time I met Nancy. And then Nancy and I talking on the college campus and all that. We still filmed the whole thing. And we thought it was going to rain on us, but it didn't.
We could argue that it definitely rained all over the equipment. He just kept saying, "Oh, this is all it's going to be. This is all it's going to be."
Sprinkling,
thunder and lightning crashing around
raining,
us.
Sprinkling. Because when you're from California,
yes,
when it sprinkles, you think it's raining. That's not rain.
Emma, I'm from Oregon.
It's a mist.
I know rain.
It's a mist.
Well, was it rain or was it southern rain or was it just humid?
Thank the Lord, it was a little sprinkly. It was a great shoot. It's going to work in really well. But, I mean, now.
Max? How many cameras are you using? See, you should have never brought these guys on because now all I want to do is talk about production.
We have 2 cameras set up. I mean, JT is the technical side, so I'll let him answer that.
Can you do Sunday special?
You're sending her a bill for this information.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, we're using the Blackmagic Pocket Camera 6K Pro with Zine CF lenses, which are really nice, fancy carbon fiber lenses. So they're light, but they're really beautiful. We have, one of them is built out with lens filters and a big monitor so we can see what we're doing. The other one is stripped down and it's put on a DJI Ronin, which is a motorized gimbal that keeps the camera steady. So for example, we did a shot at Macon First Presbyterian, the name of the church.
Right. That was an amazing,
I saw a story, right? I saw a
little... Well, yeah, I never thought I could look that good on a video. I never thought I could look that good. I looked like Johnny Cash. I mean,
and you sound, your voice is equally as amazing. How do well, you like it that? Was,
these guys made me look like a movie star.
You are like, this is what we do. Okay,
Bill, okay, you be quiet just for a second. Guys, don't you think he could hypothetically be like pretty huge?
Yes,
that's why we're here.
Wouldn't that be so fun? It would be so fun because be like fun. He's gonna be the poster child care. For the boomers who are like, you know, third career plus he sounds like fucking Elvis Presley, you know, so it's exciting, right?
I got a fan.
Bill's music is relevant. And it's relevant.
Right?
Yeah. It's super relevant and needs to get out, needs to be heard. And I think we're really hoping that these videos and the extremely high quality that we put, that we're going to put them out, is going to encourage that relevance to be seen and shareable.
And it's so nice, right? Because there's like, he's like a horse where there's no bottom really probably to what we can, what he can do. You know, it's so nice to back the horse who's got the goods.
Yep.
It's exciting.
Yep, exactly.
And let me just jump in. I want to tell you, ask a question real quick. Let me see that microphone thing. You asked a question of like, what's the similarity between horsemanship and musicianship? And I've ridden a horse maybe 4 times, so I'm not the one to speak about horsemanship. Although I did.
But you did ride a horse while you were filming.
I did ride a horse while I was filming. Yeah, that is part
and
of how
we also got to step in some cow manure.
No, that was Max. I avoided it. But here was something interesting. So first thing, Bill picks us up from the airport, and we go around, and we have to pick up equipment from rentals in Atlanta. And so we're getting back a little bit late, and he says, first thing I have to do is I have to help get this horse into a trailer. I guess never been in a trailer before, right?
No, he had never been in a trailer before.
And so I don't know what I'm looking at. You know, I know that I'm looking at a horse trying to get into a trailer, and it doesn't want to do it. And Bill is patient. Bill waits. Bill tries different things. Bill listens to the horse. And we watched as the horse just, you know, really, really got comfortable with it over time. Bill helped it. And there was just an incredible amount of sensitivity and patience. And that was like one of my first interactions. I was just watching him do this. And Max is explaining to me, Max is obviously much, much more knowledgeable about horses. And he's explaining to me that the patience that Bill is showing, that's where the special sauce is. He's not rushing the horse. He's letting the horse's progress and the horse's process be what it is. And he's there to guide it and nurture it. So that was the first thing. That was how I sort of got to know Bill. And then... Billy, that's right, Billy Money. And as we're doing this process, we're starting to hear music that he wrote, you know, long ago. And we're hearing stories from, you know, how he got to where he is today. And I don't know the details about the horsemanship, but I can tell you that in order to be an artist at any level in the industry, you have to have patience with yourself. You know, you are the horse in that kind of situation. If you push yourself or if you, you know, strip yourself of that dignity because you couldn't do something at a certain time, you're not going to get back up. You're not going to do it. And Max said Billy's music is relevant. And I couldn't agree more. And watching him and listening to him and being a part of the stories of these songs, I don't know. Why he can't be the next big thing. I don't know. If it's his age, then I don't like the industry. You know, he has such important emotions in his stories and in his music. And I like you said, you feel like the relationship with horses has shown you how to, you know, do different things in your relationship with people. And I think that comes through in his art very uniquely. And I don't think a lot of artists have that background or creative input into their art. And so I think if you guys go and listen to his music, you're definitely going to hear something special because this is not your average person.
Well, I don't know if it's too emotional about singing about Dip and Chew.
Well. The emotion might be comedic.
Well, duh. The lightheartedness of it all. That's what that's in that one. JT, I love that. So cool. And you know, I'm going to, I don't know if this is what you meant exactly, but I think that thinking about a creativity as the horse in that situation, like being patient with your creativity and treating your creativity as a thing that needs to run its own course, you know, and be gently shaped and waited for. That's what popped into mind when you said that. And if you do that, then a purity will come out, I would guess, in what you create. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, being anxious about being better with a horse will not serve you well. And being anxious about trying to be successful in anything, trying to push it, that will not do you well either. Just, you know, get in the lane you're supposed to be in, and just work hard. And don't expect that it's gonna, you have to have a long-term view. And it doesn't matter, we were talking about it today, if this, all this happens and nobody gets any, you know, excited about my music, I don't care. I mean, I'm going to do my music anyway. I enjoy.
We're excited. Can you tell we're excited?
I'm excited about my music. And if you're not, well, you know, then you and I don't fit, but that's okay. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And I'm going to keep working horses and helping people and making bridle horses and, you know, whatever that leads is fine. I don't really have an agenda about where that has to be. But it does seem like right now a lot of things are lining up for me to possibly do some good things. But you know what? I know some great artists. I'll just use Natalie as an example. Natalie Murphy is, gosh, she is just a tremendous artist. Good writer, good singer, a hell of a fiddle player. And it's a great feel for songwriting. And, you know, I wouldn't have the opportunities I have today if it wasn't for Nick and Natalie. And, she's going to kick it through there and some great things are going to happen for her. But you have to have that long-term view that I'm just going to keep doing what I know is right. And keep writing good music and keep singing, and it'll happen in its own due time. And if you start, I was talking about my music lawyer. You gotta have a music lawyer. if you're pensive about trying to make something happen, then everybody around you is gonna sense that you need it, and it's not gonna work out for you. And the same thing is true with horses. If you go out there in the pasture, you know, to catch a horse, and you're like pensive about it, you know, you're like kind of semi-predator about how you approach the horse, well, then that's not going to go well for you. And the same thing when you're riding them, you know, you got to, I just guess, Ray, there's no way around it. Ray, you know, I don't know if he was the first person to say it or not, but again, he said, it's just simple as this, just fit the horse. Just go with him and learn how to be his leader and learn how to, that he wants to be led by you. And that's a tall order. You know, music is, to me, is a little easier, you know, but you have to have the talent because I don't have to this not another person in my way, you know, that I have to deal with to have a good song come out or to be a poet. And I was given this voice. So
it's not a collaboration necessarily.
No, the horsemanship is tougher because you have to figure out how to fit that horse and have that relationship. And that's, I would say the horsemanship is the toughest thing I've ever done in my life. You know, but because I think I had the talent of to be a doctor, the talent to be a musician. And I do think I'm, you know, talented in horsemanship, but it's not the same because you've got another person, well, another animal that you have got to communicate with in order to get your goal accomplished. And there's the rub.
Directing your own life force is one thing.
Yeah.
And directing another individual's is another. Yeah.
And why we're so passionate about it is because we had these little vignettes of success, you know, and then, like, I remember I was trying to figure out, you know, oh, that's 14 years ago, how can I get this horse to, you know, get engaged and just light on the front end and just feel this elevation, you know. I was reading Boucher and all that kind of stuff, talking to Buck, and I said, you know, can you tell me something that would just kind of make it happen for me? And that's when he said, I can teach you what I know. And I said, again, before, I wanted to kill him. Not really, but I really did upset me. And what that did is it caused me to search even deeper. And then that one day, I'm riding around with this little palomino, and I'm just kind of feeling things. And all of a sudden, the withers came up into me, and I felt his hind quarters just kind of get up underneath there, and his front end became just light as a feather for about two strides. And I just stopped, threw the reins down, and wept like a baby. And I said, I want more of that.
And why? Why do you suppose? Why was it so emotional? I have an idea, but I'm asking you.
Is this something you wanted so bad?
Yes.
You're searching for it so bad, and then it took you figuring out how to get out of the way to minimize yourself and elevate the horse for that to happen. That's kind of my guess. I don't know. I think it's so special. I don't know if you can be so smart to put it in words. And maybe if you could put it into words, it might minimize it.
Maybe, I suppose, if you were to just say, well, these are the only words to use.
But you ought to give a stab at it.
Well, so
I'm not sure if I can describe it correctly.
Well, I mean, it's not important to describe it, really. It's a very, very cool thing to remember, and I certainly can identify with it. But I think that the feeling of being in harmony is euphoric.
Yeah, you're exactly right. When you felt that, I said to myself, I actually came home that night and came upstairs. And I told Nancy what I felt today. And I said, I want a lot more of that.
And I think that's natural and good to want to be, to yeah. have a feeling of being in harmony.
Yeah, you're right.
And isn't it interesting, we're talking about music too, because harmony is a thing.
It is.
Not just in the way something sounds, in the way the sound wave, I'm making it, you guys can't say, but you know, in the way the sound wave comes, like all the feeling of being in harmony with
Yeah, I mean, I could write songs. I've written a lot of songs, but there's a time when a song kind of, I mean, it just comes out of the, I don't know where it comes from. It just comes, and I start singing it, and the words come, the correct words are not very seldom easy, because you're trying to communicate ideas. So you should struggle with those, because you care about what you're saying, and you want to say it, you want to communicate. I find a lot of times the best how you communicate a thought is in a very simplistic words, but and it's the pauses, how you phrase it, that makes it so powerful. And then you put the right music behind that. It's a strong message. And then every once in a while, you hit that kind of song, and then you just kind of know. It's the kind of a, I know a song is really good for me that I've written, that when I catch myself during the day, whistling the tune, my own song, that means that I really like it. Now, I just didn't write a song, but I really like that song, you know, so. So that's that.
Well, it's a very interesting parallel. Very, very interesting parallel, because it's a little bit the same with a perfect horsemanship moment, right? It's like the reality is we didn't create that. We just
experienced it.
Exactly. It was there all along. You just had to chip away enough.
And Buck's words, there's no magic there. There's just hard work, knowledge, and your search, and not killing the search and the horse. Because as you know, the horse has a tremendous desire to please. And so if you get in line with that, and then they're going to kind of try to come to you. And then that moment happens and you feel that. And then like, what did Ray say? Observe, remember, compare. So then you do that right after that happens and you say, I want more of that. So you're, well, let me remember what I did. And that probably the first time you do that, you say, I forget what I did. It was an accident. but maybe you it's a feel, you know.
And
it's
like,
when Buck talks about, in his clinics a lot of times, he says, I want you to walk out. Now I want you with your body, you've trod them. Walk them faster and walk them slower and trot them, walk them, trot them fast, trot them slow. And let me see if you can, how little you can do to do it. And then somebody will ask him a question, what are you doing to do that? And then he's got a little grin on his face when he says that, because that's exactly what he wanted somebody to ask him. And then he says, well, if I was to tell you what I'm doing, it might not be what you would do, you need to feel that yourself, and so it's not mechanical. And that's getting into that realm of, wish I could teach you what I know, but I can't.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's the most profound statement you can make. I wish I could teach you what I know, but I can't. And that says the whole deal about horsemanship, because you, the mechanical things are relatively, should be relatively easy to teach people that, okay, you bend the horse here and way lateral, and now you're coming to here, and now you want the hind to reach out. Well, you need support rein and your support leg, open up your right leg and take the horse's right foot and reach it behind your back so they'll put that foot where your hand is. And then everybody doesn't do that. You think the mechanical things, that should be the easy part. But that other part, you can't even go there until you mechanically get some things right about how
wait till you see how he's adjusted his way of teaching that. Oh, you saw it in Dayton. Oh, yeah. Isn't that funny? He gave it up already. It's funny. It's good.
Good. He
adjusted. Yeah, well, the thing, so you can't teach someone what you know, but who was it? Was it Bill that said it? I wish that I could, I think Max, you probably remember, said something like, and this surely this appears, applies to music and any creative process as well. I can't, oh, Ray said this too. So whatever, everyone's saying it. I can't teach you the thing. I can just get you in and around it.
Right.
And so we could maybe force our teachers to not get off the hook by, it's like, yeah, okay, you can't teach me exactly what you know, but still use some words, talk about it.
Well, I think that's what I'm trying to learn how to do that instead of just feed a bunch of information. I think Tom Dorrance was great at that. Ray Hunt was, and you know, you've been following around the buck for a long time. I have too, but over the last 4 or 5 years, I've seen him, you know, figure out ways to help you set up some different little scenarios to where you increase your desire to search for the answer, because that's what you have to do. Because if you give them an answer, that don't do any good for something like that. I mean, mechanical things, yeah, but how to feel that? I mean, it sounds like you're talking about, you know, Yoda, you know, something like that. Just like the first time I read Tom Dorrance's book, you know, I read it and I thought to myself, yeah, I probably thought you had it with you. I thought, man, he's speaking weird language and whatnot. And then I read it again about 3 years later, if that made better sense to me. And now I read it, you know, I'm thinking, oh, gosh, yeah, I can understand it. Now I know where he's coming from. But you got to, you know, be in the journey a while. And that guy was like, you know, he was a very special guy. And there's some things he said, I'll probably die and still don't understand.
Well, but, it was so cool to get to send you that section when I was reading it that day, because I was just like, it's so wild to thank God he took the time to write it out. Because think about it, what he was talking about, and for those of you guys that haven't read it, is this True Unity. Tom Dorrance wrote this book. I think the copyright is like 1988 or something like that. And this, so can I read this little section,
sure.
Bill? He goes, I didn't used to elaborate on the third factor, spirit. I only just mentioned it, but I've begun to wonder about it in the last few years. Maybe if people got to realizing the importance of that part of the horse, they could get more feel and understanding from right in the horse's innards. Then they could try to figure out the mental and the physical parts. So isn't that interesting? Because he's talking about it the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read that again after you sent it to me. You know, you're never going to force a horse to ever do anything that's quality. You're not going to do it. You're not going to force them and have that horse's mind with you. Everything, that's not happening. And I think that you know, they were created by God, and they have a spirit in them that's from Him. And that may be a little much for some people to be able to take, but it's true.
And, okay, so.
And so, so without getting too deep into that, just I can say this, examples, you know, we have interns, you know, come, and it's interesting to me to, you know, see them go catch their horse for the first time, you know, and some of them, have, they're different levels when they come here. But, and these are horses that, you know, I've surrendered to the interns. at the Bulls All level, okay? And I think, well, do I want to go for it? No, well, I like this horse better. I can only ride so many. So, okay, that's an intern horse. And they go out there, and they come back an hour later and say, where's your horse? I couldn't catch him. Oh, okay. And then I go out there to catch him, and they, in that short hour, because that's a good lesson to them, that a horse that I could just start going out to catch him, and they come walking up to me. I go out there, and they are even trotting away from me. And so that's kind of weird. So then it takes me about 15 minutes to get that done. And then I've got to, but then of course, Ray Hunt is a funny story. Buster McLavery told me the story. He came by the house and stayed a couple of days in between his clinics. And I told him, tell me a funny Ray Hunt story. And Buster, I hope you don't mind me telling the story. and if I get it wrong, you call me. So he had this kid that was working with Ray Hunt on his place. And he didn't tell me his name, but he came and worked for the summer and had him back to school. So he said, well, Ray, what should I be working on till next year? I want to come back next year. Can I come back next year? He said, oh, yeah, come back next year. What should I be working on? He said, well, you know, a feller could get a lot done by working on haltering a horse, you know, the right way, with the right feel. And then Ray kind of cradled the horse and put the halter on, did his little thing, and took it off and walked away. So the kid goes to school for 9 months, comes back, works with Ray, works all summer. And so he said, well, you know, a fella can get really good at haltering a horse. Yeah, it's my feel. So what he was telling the kid is that you still haven't learned that, you know. And you know, it starts when you wake up in the morning and you're going to walk down there to the barn and you get a halter and you're walking out there to catch that horse. That's as much horsemanship as it is riding them. It starts from the time you get out of your bed. It's an attitude. It's a, you know. So.
Yes, because if the horse was created by God and the horse is 100% itself, then doesn't it make perfect sense that being in harmony with the horse?
I lost you.
Oh no! I'm saying the most important thing. Okay. Can you guys hear me?
I lost you. You are not here anymore. Do we have weather coming, honey? Do we have a storm coming? There you are.
Am I back?
You're back. I didn't hear anything you said.
Okay, that's all right.
Yeah, last thing you said was, okay, the horse is created by God.
Well, all I'm saying is that then doesn't it make sense that everything, how we are, affects that, and that moment that you were talking about 14 years ago when you first felt harmony with the horse, of course that makes you want to weep, because if you're in harmony with the horse, you're in harmony with God. So of course you're going to be struck.
I'll admit I'm a very emotional person. I don't back down from that.
I don't mean you though. A person is
I think you should be that way. I think that's, you have to open yourself up to, you know, feelings like that. You know, Buck Brannaman is a very emotional person. I don't think you can deal with horses unless you open yourself up to feeling people and horses, everything else. You find a man who doesn't like dogs, I probably don't want to know him very much.
Yeah, speaking of dogs, where's Leroy? But it's not, bring Leroy, because I know you guys have to get way later there.
Leroy, Leroy, come here. Where's he, honey? Come on, Leroy. Come here.
Oh my gosh, it's gonna make me want to be a dog. Buddy.
Leroy. Leroy. Stop it. Come here. Come here, Leroy. You're not being a very good actor. Okay, come here. Come here. Come here. Leroy.
Well, the last time he was on Leroy the show, he was a lot more excited about it, buddy.
Leroy can't help it because he has a spinal problem, and if he pinches his little tail, he chases it because he thinks somebody bit him.
Oh,
poor
buddy.
Little
Leroy. So cute.
He's the sweetest dog in the whole world.
Oh, my Lord.
He loved Daddy.
Yep.
I know.
So cute.
Buck, if you're watching, it's okay to talk sweet to your little puppies.
He talks like that to Abby.
I know.
He loves her.
He doesn't talk as sweet as I do.
Well.
He doesn't. He needs to learn that. Doesn't he, Mary? Doesn't he, Mary? Tell him about it, Mary. Okay, don't get in your crate. He's mad because I'm not spending time with him.
Poor Leroy. Well, I know it is time for bed, but are there any other Max and JT? Is there anything else we should know
they
about?
Have,
did they leave?
They have gone down to pack up all of the equipment because they're leaving tomorrow morning. So they
it's late.
Kind of scoot outside. But I will tell you what, if you ever thought about anybody doing music videos or any kind of teaching videos, these guys, I mean. They are off the chart. You just wait to see my two videos, music videos. And we're already planning the third and fourth one. The third one is a new song I wrote called Let Our Love Grow, which you featured on your.
Yes, I did. And by the way, that one got stuck in my head. So I'll tell you about a hit song. That is an earworm. Mm-hmm.
So, yep. And then the other song is a song called You Don't Know How Much You're Gonna Want Me.
Oh, I think you've sung a little bit of that one to me too.
Yeah. We'll start those in a couple of months after these are out.
Cool. Yeah. I'm so happy for you, Bill, and so excited to be a part of it.
Well, I'm very, very humbled by the whole process. You know, I just, it's a crazy thing is I didn't plan any of this. I wasn't kind of going after it. I was just going to do a benefit. And all this stuff just kind of, you know, fell together. And of course, you know, I've done some concerts with some very famous people. Buck Bradman, you know, sung a great duet with me in West Virginia. And we haven't released that on the internet. But if you would like for us to, you can, I don't know how you do. You have to, you know, put a lot of requests into Buck's.
Well, you can,
Buck channel,
you can
request
go to the
release
Buck channel.
Of the video of him singing a duet with me, but I don't think he'll release it. I can't play it. He doesn't say I can.
You can go to the Buck channel here on Instagram, and there is a clip of it.
I can't release that without his permission.
No, it's there. It's there. Yeah.
You got it on there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, good.
Yeah.
So go watch that.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna I'd like to do one clinic a year. Billy Money Band shows up and do it at a different clinic every year. Make that kind of a routine type deal. And we'll have Buck sing at least one song.
That would be cool.
Because you know I'm with him quite a bit and he likes to sing along with the radio. And so, you know, so we know he has a pretty good voice.
He does. Yes, he does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What we need to be everybody kind of put effort in is we need that screenplay that he did about Faraway Horses to be made into a movie. We got to start talking that up. Get somebody to hear about it.
I totally think it would be good timing for it right now. Yeah. So basically, it's a screenplay of the Faraway Horses.
Yeah.
So if you haven't read The Faraway Horses, get it on Amazon, read it. But yeah, it is, that would, I think, be relevant to come around for sure.
Yeah.
I do think we should be talking about that. That'd be cool.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It'll come in its own time, and it's in the right time. It will come.
Where's your sweet husband at?
Yeah, he's here. He's being very quiet right now. He played golf all day.
Oh,
so Bill. So he's have you run into this where there's so many young people that have been inspired by all the YouTubers, the golf YouTubers so they're out on the golf course and there's lots of them, like, you know, in their 20s and 30s, but they don't have any idea about etiquette because they're just excited about golf because they've been watching the good guys or whatever.
We just have to allow them to explore.
And then
you have to join a club where it costs more money to join it, so that way you can have more time without those people there.
Yeah, he was playing at the beach today. He's got a buddy, a client of mine, a real estate client of mine, who we've become really good friends.
Well, tell him I said hello because we have a transaction between us that we need to accomplish.
Like what? No, well, exactly.
We need to talk about it here.
Oh, okay. Are you coming to Florida? Because I know there's going to be some golf.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Because so everybody's going to play afterwards, right? I think, are we all coming in on the 10th?
Whatever the date is, I'll be there. I'm only, you know, 7 hours away.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. I'm excited. I know you have your clinic coming up.
Yeah.
Two.
Are you going to go? Yeah.
Well, you should tell people about that really quick.
We'll do. Okay. So we're doing... I don't have my calendar, but it's September 15th, 16th, and 17th, I think. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. In Unadilla. Is that right, honey?
Yes.
The boss says it's right.
Thank you, Nancy.
15th, 16th, and 17th. And you should come over, honey. So you can.
Yes, yes.
We want to see you, honey. Come here.
Yes. She's the muse.
She is the person that makes the clinic go because... She knows a lot about horsemanship. She can give a lot of people advice about things. And she doesn't ride. But we have 30 or so in H1 and with a few slots left in H2. A few slots in H2. There you are, honey. There she is.
Hi, Nancy.
Yeah. Hey.
So nice to meet you finally. She's a wonderful silver. Do you call yourself a silversmith?
Yes, metalsmith.
A metalsmith. Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's Nancy Barnes Jewelry on here?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I'll link it on the show.
We have a couple spots in H2 still open.
Okay. So the 15th, 16th, or 17th? Of
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and there's a couple spots in H1 and H2.
No, just only in H2.
Yeah, H1 is booked with a wait list.